Hello, it is Monday, June 8th, and welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung, fresh aboard KBS World's English service. President Lee Jae-myung has vowed to make Korea a, quote, irreplaceable nation that's a major player on the global stage. We'll have more on that in our news briefing segment. On our in-depth news analysis, we'll look at how well or poorly the Lee Jae-myung administration has fared in its first year at the helm of the South Korean economy. For our weekly sports roundup, we take a look at the coming World Cup and a preview of this week's baseball action. Korea 24 starts now. President Lee Jae-myung laid out his vision to make South Korea, quote, irreplaceable on the global stage while marking the anniversary of his inauguration with a press conference at Cheongwa-dae. Lee presented new national goals, including establishing the nation as a world-leading industrial powerhouse and a place where the government protects and prioritizes its people. For more on the press conference and other major headlines of the day, we have in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World's English News Service, Kim In-kyung, with us. Hello, In-kyung.
Hello, Andrew.
President Lee held a press briefing today to mark his one-year anniversary in office, which was Thursday. Before he took questions, he laid out his primary vision for his second year. In-kyung, can you give us the details?
Sure. He stated his plan to transform South Korea into an irreplaceable country on the global stage. He presented four national goals to achieve this vision. The four goals are to transform the country into a world-leading industrial powerhouse with absolute competitiveness in advanced technologies, to strengthen South Korea's role in global diplomacy and security, to build a society where norms and rules are upheld by all, and to ensure that the government puts citizens' lives and safety first.
Now, moving on to bread and butter issues, what did the president have to say about the economy?
He said his administration will support economic growth by directing excess tax revenue from the semiconductor boom into long-term investments. But he said the controversy over excess profit allocation sparked by the recent wage dispute at Samsung Electronics has international implications and needs broader discussion. He also said he plans to clarify property tax issues in July, suggesting a property tax hike.
Many people were waiting for his response to last week's ballot shortages during the local elections. What did he have to say?
He said the ballot shortages had ruined South Korea's model democracy in an instant, and it prompted him to reflect on his own complacency. He said he didn't realize the full extent of the structural problems plaguing the National Election Commission and expressed his admiration and appreciation for the young people who have spoken out against the incident. Let's take a listen to what he said.
한심하다고 생각했지만 그런 구조적인 문제로까지 접근 못했던 거죠. 근데 여기 이제 많은 주로 청년들,
I thought the election commission was merely disappointing, but I hadn't seen it as a structural problem. Watching young people raise these issues, I wonder if I've become less sensitive to what really matters. This isn't a question of vote counts or outcomes. In and of itself, it is a very serious problem.
이거는 표의 숫자나 결과의 문제가 아니라 그 자체가 매우 심각한 문제다.
The president also said he has instructed the prosecutor's office and the police to form a joint investigation headquarters to uncover the truth behind the case.
Meanwhile, the blockade of a ballot counting center in Seoul's Jamsil area over the ballot shortages is continuing for a fourth day. In-kyung, can you explain?
Sure. Police estimated that the crowd surrounding the Olympic handball gymnasium in Songpa district where votes were counted had fallen from a high of 30,000 to around 2,000 as of 12:30 p.m. Monday. The protesters claim ballot shortages violated their constitutional rights and are demanding a revote. Employees of the National Election Commission who were stranded inside the gymnasium have since escaped, but some ballot boxes and related equipment remain inside. The police has dispatched riot squads in case the situation escalates.
Given how deeply divided politics usually is, how are the rival parties reacting?
In a rare moment of unity, both the ruling and opposition parties are calling for a thorough investigation, but they pretty much defer after that. The Democratic Party and the People Power Party submitted separate requests for a parliamentary investigation into the ballot shortages, differing on the duration and who should chair the investigation committee. PPP chief Jang Dong-hyuk is also calling for a revote and an investigation by a special prosecutor, claiming that the shortages were centered in areas that traditionally support the conservative opposition. The DP said it intends to revamp the National Election Commission, even if doing so requires constitutional amendments.
In other headlines, Chinese President Xi Jinping has arrived in North Korea to begin a two-day state visit at the invitation of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. What can you tell us?
There was a very grand welcome. Kim and his wife, Lee Seol-ju, personally greeted Xi at the airport on Monday. China's state-run Central Television and Xinhua News Agency reported that Xi headed to Kim Il-sung Square next for a welcome ceremony. CCTV said North Korea had installed a large portrait of Xi and Kim on the main building of the square and that phrases underscoring the friendship between the two countries were written in Korean and Chinese on both sides of the portrait. As Kim and Xi ascended the stage, the military band played the national anthems of the two nations, followed by a 21-gun salute. Kim and Xi surveyed the North Korean honor guard, who wished Xi good health in Korean.
We are just getting breaking news from China's People's Daily that at around 5:05 p.m., President Xi and Chairman Kim were holding a summit at the Kumsusan Guest House in Pyongyang. They are set to discuss economic cooperation as well as regional issues, including the North Korean nuclear issue. Coming back to Seoul, President Lee Jae-myung has nominated ministers of SMEs and startups Han Sung-suk to be his next prime minister. In-kyung, can you tell us more?
Sure. Presidential Chief of Staff Kang Hoon-sik said in a briefing on Sunday that Han was the right person to flawlessly ensure the transition to artificial intelligence. Before joining the Lee administration, Han served as chief executive of online portal giant Naver. If approved by the National Assembly, Han would become South Korea's first female prime minister since Han Myung-suk, who served in the post from 2006 to 2007. Current Prime Minister Kim Min-seok is stepping down and is widely expected to run in the Democratic Party leadership at the party convention, which has been set for August 17th. Current party chair Jeong Cheong-nae is expected to aim for another term, while former party leader Song Yong-gil is also being mentioned as a possible candidate.
Let's now turn to the KOSPI, which plunged by more than 8% to under 8,000 points on Monday. What happened?
The KOSPI tumbled amid rate hike concerns in the U.S. and following a major sell-off of semiconductor shares on Wall Street. The main bourse opened down 1.38% and soon extended its losses. Authorities activated a circuit breaker about 3 minutes after opening, holding trading for 20 minutes, then halted program sell orders for 5 minutes starting at 9:34 a.m. The tech-heavy KOSPI also lost more than 9% to close barely above 910.
Another reason for the nosedive was net selling by foreign and institutional investors who dumped shares worth 356 billion won and 1.6 trillion won, respectively. Foreign selling also led to a slide in the local currency.
That's right. The currency opened at 1,555.21, its highest level since March 6, 2009, during the global financial crisis. That led to a verbal intervention by financial authorities easing the exchange rate. The Bank of Korea and the Ministry of Finance and Economy announced Monday morning that in addition to supply and demand dynamics, certain speculative foreign exchange transactions such as offshore non-deliverable forwards have recently increased volatility in the foreign exchange market. Immediately after the Central Bank and Finance Ministry made its announcement, the exchange rate decreased slightly and fell back to the 1,541 range.
We have an update on Jensen Huang, the CEO of NVIDIA, who's been visiting Korea since last week. In-kyung, can you tell us more?
Sure. LG and NVIDIA have agreed to expand strategic cooperation in physical artificial intelligence, AI infrastructure, and mobility. LG Chairman Gu Kang-mo and Huang discussed cooperation for the establishment of an AI industrial ecosystem during a meeting on Monday at LG Twin Towers in Seoul's Yeouido. In physical AI, the two companies agreed to enhance cooperation in the development of humanoids and logistics robots and to seek creation of a self-manufacturing ecosystem by combining LG's manufacturing data and NVIDIA's AI computing and digital twin technology. In terms of infrastructure, LG and NVIDIA will work together on designing, building, and operating a data center based on the latter's DSX AI factory architecture and push for joint development and certification of cooling solutions. The two sides plan to combine LG's electrical and electronic control technologies for vehicles with NVIDIA's autonomous driving platform to upgrade next-generation advanced driver assistance systems and mobility AI systems.
That's it for today's news briefing. Thank you, In-kyung.
Thank you, Andrew.
June 4th marks President Lee Jae-myung's first year in office. Over the past year, the benchmark KOSPI has surged to above 8,000, way above Lee's campaign pledge to reach 5,000, driven by the boom in memory chips, exports of which are going strong, despite the ongoing war in the Middle East and looming concerns about U.S. tariffs. South Korea's economy, however, has faced various headwinds, including a weakening Korean won, rising inflation, and still very high housing prices in the greater Seoul area. To get a pulse on South Korea's economic performance during Lee Jae-myung's first year as president, we are joined on the line by economics professor Yang Jun-suk from the Catholic University of Korea. Hello, Professor Yang.
Hello.
So, to our first question, Professor Yang, what would you say are the biggest economic achievements of the Lee Jae-myung administration in this past year?
Okay, well, I think the two major accomplishments are the performance of the stock market, especially the KOSPI index, and managing the effects of the Iran war. For the stock market, Lee's administration has improved transparency of the stock market and stockholder rights. Now, we can argue about how much did the Lee administration do actually to raise the stock indices to historical levels. But I think changing these type of transparency and stockholder right rules have contributed somewhat to the gains in the index and does count as an accomplishment. I'm not sure if the market would have gone quite this high unless those reforms had been taken. And then secondly, I think the how the Lee administration handled the effects of the Iran war is a major accomplishment. First of all, they provided a steady supply of oil. Hmm. Now, if you remember back in March, we were somewhat afraid that the supply of oil would be spotty or we would have oil shortages. None of that has taken place. The government was very successful in shifting supply from Saudi Arabia to Indonesia and Canada, and using innovative measures such as oil swap with UAE, oil that UAE had in the storage facilities in Korea. So to my knowledge, Korea's emergency reserves of oil has not been touched yet. We were worried that not only would there be shortages in oil, but oil-related products such as plastic, naphtha, the raw ingredients to make plastic, which is made from oil. There were some initial shortages of naphtha and plastic bags, plastic products in March. But looking back, it seems that it wasn't caused by a reduction in supply, but increases in demand because a lot of users of plastic were afraid that plastic products would not be available later in the year, so they wanted to hoard plastic products before the shortages started. The supply has been relatively steady. The prices have gone up, but there has been no shortages yet. So they have done, I think, a fairly good job in managing the effect from the Iran war. Hmm. Some of the other accomplishments, I think their housing policy is basically set in the right direction. They have promised higher supply, and they've also been trying to set up the stock market as a alternate means of investment for retirement and future. Now, some of the plans have not been made concrete yet. The president has said that he would make concrete plans available very soon. But I think the direction is something to be applauded for. And the growth rate, even though you can argue how much was the administration responsible, right now, most investment banks, research institutions are projecting that Korean growth this year will be somewhere between 2.5 to 2.7%. Mm-hmm. If that comes true, that would be the highest growth that Korea has seen without a explicit recession in the year before. That would be the highest growth rate that we had in some time.
Mm. So to sum, Professor Yang has referred to the KOSPI, the management of the Iran war, including oil supplies, and putting the housing policy in the right direction, and overseeing a potentially very high growth rate that we have not seen in a while. But South Korea's economy has faced headwinds, multiples of them, amid the ongoing conflict in the Middle East. Professor Yang, what were the biggest challenges that the economy here has faced, and what aspects of the local economy could President Lee Jae-myung have dealt with in a better way?
Well, the biggest challenge was Iran war, and they've been doing things more or less as good as it could be expected. But other problems that keeps coming up. The biggest problem that we see right now is the weak Korean won, the high exchange rate. Lee may not be fully to blame for the weak Korean won. There has been long-term structural problems in the Korean foreign exchange market. The size of it is too small. Only two currencies are served directly by the Korean foreign exchange market, the U.S. dollar and Chinese yuan. So those tend to act as bottlenecks. And then for the last few years, even before the Lee administration, we've seen domestic investors going abroad, investing in other countries. And that is not entirely Lee administration's fault. But since the Iran war started, we've seen high energy prices. And then most of the growth in the stock market and foreign capital inflows has been related to semiconductors. And there has been some concerns that AI rally may be ending. And then there are ultra short-term factors such as speculation in the NDF, non-deliverable fund markets. Foreigners moving out of Korean markets in the last couple of weeks. It may be because they are profit-taking. It may be because they want to get more cash on hand for investment in SpaceX, which is coming later this month. But still, the weak Korean won is a major problem. Another major problem has been labor policy. Samsung Electronics strike with their principle of giving, say, N percent going to labor bonuses, and coupled with the yellow envelope law, which confuses who the real employer is. The law does not completely spell out exactly who is responsible for what when you're making labor contracts. So there has been a lot of confusion on that part. And in conjunction with the Samsung Electronics strike and the N% bonus, that could have the potential to really have a major disruption in the labor market. Trade policy has been mediocre, but that's more a fault of U.S. President Trump rather than President Lee. Government finances. Government has been saying that it is proud that it rolled out supplementary budget spending, but it may have done it too early. The inflation is going up, and the economy is going to have a strong growth this year. In hindsight, there might not have been a need for a supplementary budget. Korea has been lucky in that it did not worsen inflation. But still, the government stance seems to be that we will run a deficit in bad years, and we will also run a deficit in good years, which would make government deficit unsustainable in the long run. So that is a worrying part as well. And then related to that, so far the government has not really announced that much of a long-term structural plans for reforms. We are going to need that if we want to increase Korea's long-term potential growth rate. The administration has selected the AI industry as a sort of a targeted industry, but we will need more than that. So the lack of long-term plans and perhaps replacing long-term plans with short-term government spending, increases in government spending, that may be a bad strategy.
Mm. So I actually had a question about some of the things that you touched on here, including fiscal policy. You talked about how the administration has hinted that it could keep spending regardless of what the government deficit is. How much has the handouts and other fiscal policies under President Lee Jae-myung affected the weak Korean won?
Okay, well, so far we had two rounds of spending. The second round is so recent that we haven't really seen any effects. We haven't seen any statistics, so I can't tell you anything about that. The first round of spending was given to the 40% lowest households in Korea, and that seems to have sparked new consumption. That's around 40% of the amount that was spent by the government, which is somewhat better than what it was during the same type of payment that we had during the COVID-19 lockdown. But still, it's not a very efficient way of increasing expenditure to try to invigorate the economy. Money given out, 40% was spent on new consumption. That meant that 60% has been spent. Mm. Now, we don't quite know where that 60% has gone. It could have gone into personal savings account. It was given to the poorest households, so it probably did not go into housing. Mm. But I think there's a good possibility that it may have gone into stocks.
Okay. So that might have had maybe, you know, if it went to foreign stocks, I guess that might have had some effect on the exchange rate. But we don't know since we don't have the numbers in front of us. But Professor Gao, all in all, what's your overall assessment of the South Korean economy during President Lee Jae-myung's first year in office?
Okay, well, I would say that the economy is doing much better than expected. We have 2.6% growth rate at the end of last year. We were thinking about 1.8% as the growth rate for this year. And then right after the Iran war, that percentage went down as low as 1%. Mm. But now it's 2.7%. So you cannot argue that the economy seems to be doing well overall. But on the other hand, the success is concentrated on very few industries, mostly semiconductors, maybe automobiles and the defense weaponry sector. Mm. Now, how much of that was due to Lee's policies? I think that's arguable. I think a lot of his policies are similar to the policies of the past presidents. As I said, instead of concentrating on what Korea needs in the long run, structural reforms, he seems to be using fiscal spending to try to raise the growth rate. Also, he has selected a industry, AI, for targeted growth, but the other presidents usually select a industry for them to target, and it's usually an up-and-coming fashionable industry. Previously, it was green industries or creative industries or virtual reality. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I think the Lee administration was very lucky about AI. Mm. It sort of hit the jackpot. Now there's a question whether this jackpot will continue, but still, I think it's notable that Korea has been experiencing such a great growth rate and stock market in the last few months. But we should also remember that the long-term outlook for Korea may not be that optimistic. According to KDI, last year's potential growth rate was 1.8 to 2%, and we've fallen about half of that. Mm. We actually gotten only about half. 2026, this year's potential growth rate is calculated between 1.6 to 1.7, so we will do somewhat better than that. But 2027 is 1.5%, and most people expect the potential growth rate for Korea to be in the 1% or less than 1% in the next decade, early next decade. So Korean growth is, if you look at the long-term potential path, it is falling. And we need to have reforms to pick the potential growth rate back up again. But there doesn't seem to be a concrete plan for that.
Mm. You might have touched on some answers for my final question to you today. In a speech ahead of the press conference to mark his first year in office on Monday, President Lee Jae-myung promised to make South Korea an industrial powerhouse where anyone throughout the country can equally enjoy the opportunities and benefits of growth. The president also said he would continue to seek and nurture new growth engines in areas other than semiconductors. Professor Young, again, you've touched on some of this, but as an economist, do you have some key advice that you would like to give the administration heading into its second year, keeping in mind this that last thing that you said about the growth factor, you know, continuing to decline and expected to reach under 1% in the next decade?
Right. So the potential growth rate is the amount of growth that we can reasonably accept. Given the labor, capital, and productivity we have, and as I said, it's continually falling. If we want to turn that situation around, we need to increase productivity, and that's not done through fiscal spending. It's done through structural reforms and targeted investment, and there's no concrete plans for that yet. And some of the reforms are likely to be very painful, so the past administrations have sort of kicked the bucket down the road. At least so far, that seems to be what this administration is doing as well. One additional advice that I would give, not necessarily related to long-term outlook, but something that can happen in the next few weeks or months, is that we've done extraordinarily well this year, especially the stock market. But especially in the financial market, anything that goes up very quickly can fall very quickly. Mm-hmm. So while we should be very happy about what the stock market is doing, we should be prepared in the case that it falls because in the stock market, anything that goes up can come down and at the same speed or faster. And right now, the speed of the growth in the stock market has been extraordinary. We almost never seen it anywhere, not just in Korea, but anywhere in the world. So it's actually making a lot of people, not only inside Korea, but outside Korea, somewhat nervous.
Some words of wisdom from Professor Young. Anything that can go up can come down. Thank you for your time today, sir.
Thank you.
My name is Jocelyn Clark. I'm the first official non-Korean licensee of Gayagam Sanjo in Korea. You are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
Welcome to the Korea 24 Stock Market Update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index plummeted 676.18 points, or 8.29%, on Monday to close at 7,484.41. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ lost 91.05 points, or 9.08%, to close at 911.39. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets, handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello there, Andrew.
So, what is our first story today?
A Korean ballerino Song Jae-sung clinched the TOPS award at the Helsinki International Ballet Competition.
So tell us more about ballerino Song Jae-sung and who he is and the significance of his accomplishment.
According to the organizers of the prestigious event on Monday in the 10th Helsinki International Ballet Competition held last week, the 20-year-old competed in the Young Professionals category and won the Jane Erko Grand Prix, which is the top honor at this particular competition. Sung becomes only the second Korean ballet dancer to win the honor since the late ballerina Kim Hee-sun made history in 2016. Sung also received the prize money of 20,000 euros, or around $23,000. Just last year, Korea National University of Arts student Sung placed second in the men's senior age division and first in the Pas de Deux classical division at the Youth America Grand Prix.
Your French is pretty good. He sounds like someone who's had quite a career so far, but is there anything particularly distinct about this ballet competition compared to past editions?
Yes, it is very different. While most traditional ballet competitions, they're rigidly divided by gender, there have been few that go against this convention. This is the first time in the quadrennial Helsinki International Ballet Competition's history that dates all the way back to 1984 that gender categories are removed, part of efforts to overhaul the event and usher in a brand new era.
So what happens now that the gender wall, so to speak, was removed? Any changes in the overall competition or judging methods?
Well, the new rules evaluate all dancers equally based on merit and expand age divisions into three distinct categories and to score dancers based on technical execution above all else. Such changes are looked to ensure fairer, more inclusive competition.
So I see. And I hear that there may have been a few more Koreans at this same competition. Who are they and how well did they do?
Yes, we're seeing some big K-wave in the ballet arena as well. Sung wasn't the only Korean performer that shined there. Yin Ji-young and Kang Yu-jung took the third prize in the juniors and young professionals categories, respectively.
Mm. Best of luck to all of our ballerinas and ballerinos. But let's move on to our next story. Dan, what do you have?
A new joint study by South Korean and Japanese institutes on waste management and recycling systems was published, and it shows some big differences in various categories.
I think the two countries hate losing to each other on almost everything, starting with rock, paper, scissors. But I hear that there was some competition here, too, on waste management.
Yes, Korea's National Institute of Environmental Research and Japan's National Institute for Environmental Studies announced Monday that their joint study comparing waste management and recycling systems have been published. Among the figures, it shows some stark divergence in how the two sites handle consumer waste. The first numbers that stood out is this. In terms of waste produced per person in Korea, we generate approximately 1.17 kilograms per day. Japan at 0.85 kilograms as of 2023.
So to cap, Korea lost to Japan in terms of producing less trash. Dan, can you dive deeper into Korea's trash volume? And also, are there any effective measures being implemented to reduce waste?
So for Korea, the amount of waste generated has climbed steadily over the last decade, showed some decline in recent researches. In response, the country has built a massive infrastructure network operating more than 400 active incineration facilities, and they are capable of burning more than 25,000 tons of trash daily.
So what about the recycling systems and other methods not involving burning trash?
Korea had much more impressive numbers in terms of efforts to keep trash out of landfills and out of incinerators. Korea recycled roughly 70% of its household waste. Mm-hmm. That means it's a rate nearly 3.5 times higher than Japan's 20%. Some experts believe credit should be given to Korea's very aggressive decade-long push to improve recycling driven by mandatory food waste recycling and volume-based disposal fees.
I'm a big fan of those efforts to recycle and reuse. But to summarize, Korea produces more waste, but it also recycles much more than Japan. What's the next step for the researchers for both countries from here on out?
The environmental officials involved in the project agree that the study can serve as a very important blueprint for cross-border administrative and industrial cooperation. They do plan to expand such data network beyond Seoul and Tokyo and invite more and more nations across the globe to take part in it.
Good to hear that we're all working for the common good. But to our final story, Dan, can you tell us more?
Well, other than historic performances by the Korean national men's football team in the 2002 World Cup, if you remember, the sight of practically the whole nation pouring out to the streets to rally on the Taegu Warriors made headlines across the globe. This year, South Korea's Football Federation announced plans to organize outdoor cheering events during the upcoming FIFA World Cup matches.
I think everyone old enough to remember the 2002 World Cup here in Korea and the enormous rallies at the time are looking forward to all the cheering events being planned. But where will the street cheering events for this World Cup take place?
The Korea Football Association announced Monday it will team up with its official sponsor and the national team supporter group, the Red Devils, to hold street cheering at Gwanghwamun Square in central Seoul for the country's three group stage matches. A stage and screens will be set up in the plaza. Organizers vowed to take all necessary steps to ensure safety and order during this massive event to watch and cheer on the team.
I think everyone expected Gwanghwamun to be the venue, but what are the dates and times for these events that fans should be aware of?
Team Korea will be playing three Group A contests in Mexico, so all three of them in Mexico. So in South Korean time, the Taegeuk Warriors will take on Czechia at 11 a.m. Friday, Mexico at 10 a.m. on June 19th, and the final group stage match will be on the 25th of June at 10 a.m. against South Africa.
Anything to see at these events other than, of course, the games themselves?
There will be pop-up booths inside the KT Gwanghwamun West building. It will pay tribute or homage to past Korean World Cup squads and heroes and contributors. Also, their fans can send words of encouragement to players in Mexico. The facilities will be open from 10 a.m. all the way to 6 p.m. from Monday to Saturday during the World Cup.
And that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you, Dan, for bringing us all the stories.
Thank you so much for having me.
We are Boys Choir Bonipueri, and you are now listening to
Korea 24.
It's time now for a sports roundup, your weekly look at all the action from the big wins and tough losses to the stories on and off the field. Joining us now on the line to help us do that is Yuji Ho, the sports beat writer for Yonhap News. Gio, great to have you here again on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here.
So, to our first story, the World Cup. The FIFA World Cup is finally upon us. South Korea will be playing their first Group A matchup against Czechia Friday morning, 11 a.m. here in Seoul. Gio, please give us a preview of this showdown.
Yeah, the World Cup week is finally here, and Korea's first match will be 11 a.m. Friday morning in Korean time. The match will be at Estadio Guadalajara. Korea won both of the tuna matches during the Utah training camp, beating Trinidad and Tobago 5-0, and then El Salvador 1-0. Coach Hong Myung-bo used two almost entirely different starting lineups. He was testing different combinations. The team arrived in Mexico on Friday local time. They had the first training session Saturday. It was not anything intense. It was a sort of a community training session organized by FIFA. So fans were able to actually be on hand and watch their favorite players. So it was kind of lighthearted, nothing intense, nothing serious. And Hong said Saturday he understands there is not enough time left to do a lot of different things at this point. So he's going to focus on a few areas to polish up the team's strategies and tactics.
I know there's been a lot of commotion on Hong's tactics, the lineup, and the administration of Korean football in recent months and years, but how's the team shaping up?
Yeah, you know, you mentioned tactics and strategies of Hong. I think the big knock against him is that he's not really a tactician, sort of tactical wizard, right? He's tried a few different things. Most notably, the back three system that Korea had not been really playing much lately. And he's also given a new midfield tandem of Hwang In-beom and Lee Jae-sung some extended minutes. in those two friendlies. And they, I think for the most part, perform really well. You know, Hwang is often better complemented by more defensive minded midfielders, but his usual partners are either injured or are too old, I guess, to be effective anymore. So they are not selected. Now, Lee Jae-sung is a more of a playmaker. He's a more of an attacking midfielder, who has seen more time in wings, but he is versatile enough to take on some defensive duties. Kim Min-jae will likely be flanked by Lee Gi-hyuk and Cho Wee-jae on the back line, on the back three system. But these two players have almost zero international experience between them. You know, they had some shaky moments as a trio against El Salvador, and they're going to have to get their acts together, because obviously the level of competition will only be tougher from now on. So if they have trouble against El Salvador, it doesn't, you know, it doesn't bode well for their chances against teams like, say, Mexico, or even South Africa or Czechia. So, you know, they've got to shore things up on the back. Now up front, Son Heung-min, I think, will once again have to do the heavy lifting along with players like Lee Kang-in. You know, Oh Hyun-kyu had a fine season in Turkey with his club, but he dealt with a minor injury during camp. He saw limited action in the second match against El Salvador, so he's going to have to get healthy to be the scoring option up front.
So the matchup against Czechia, what can we expect?
Yeah, so they're number 41 in FIFA rankings. They're 16 spots below South Korea. And I think people would justifiably regard Korea as the favorites in this matchup. But the, you know, the Czechs, they won their final two tuna matches as well. They beat Kosovo 2-1 and Guatemala 3-1. They did not spend a lot of time doing altitude training like Korea did. In fact, their base camp right now is in, sort of Dallas Fort Worth area. It's pretty hot and humid out there, but, you know, they're not, really preparing themselves for the altitude match, playing in high altitude like in Guadalajara. So it's going to be interesting to see how those players handle playing in thin air. Now with Korea, Coach Hong said his players must learn to overcome their size disadvantage. The Czechs have some really tall forwards who can win aerial duels and can be a threat on set pieces or even crosses. So they're going to have, the defenders and even the goalkeepers have to be really careful with those situations.
But now we go to our second sport of the day. The World Cup starts this week, but the Korean baseball season continues to chug along. This will be a big week for teams jostling for position in the middle of the standings. For me, this last weekend was a little disappointing with my LG Twins losing two in a row to the NC Dinos of Changwon. But Gio, give us a preview of the week ahead in Korean baseball.
Yeah, so it's getting crowded in the KBO standings, and the 2024 champions, Kia Tigers, are trying to crack the top three after missing the postseason entirely in 2025. So there are 17-20-1 wins, losses, and ties after games on May the 12th. They've gone 15-7-0 since, which is the best record in the KBO in that stretch. So right now they're in fourth place, two games back of the Samsung Lions. And they're going to have games against the two teams directly below them in the standings this week. So first, it's going to be the Hanwha Eagles, winners of three straight. That's the longest active winning streak in the KBO. They're in fifth place. And the Doosan Bears will play the Tigers later on the weekend. You know, they're 2.5 games behind the Tigers. Eagles one game back. The Tigers are being led by the 2024 regular season MVP, Kim Do-young. Had a historic campaign that year, but missed, you know, about 114 games last year due to injuries. You know, he's got the most home runs right now in the KBO with 18. Had four last week, including two on Sunday. So he's showing once again what he is capable of when he's healthy.
Some injuries have affected, of course, Kim Do-young. But Tigers fans probably have been enjoying this past month or so. But I know that the fans of a different team in Incheon have been in deep pain. The SSG Landers finally snapped their losing streak at 13 games last week, and they are trying now to get back on track. Gio, tell us more about the plight of the Incheon SSG Landers.
Yeah, so it was a miserable stretch for them for a while there. You know, they finally won a game on Wednesday, and you know what? Ended up winning 4 out of 6 games last week. So things are looking up finally, a little bit anyway. They're still 6 games below 500. 26-32-1, they find themselves in 8th place, 4.5 games out of 5th and final postseason spot. So, you know, their reward for riding the ship last week, they get to face two of the three best teams in the league and do so on the road. Mm. They've got three games coming up against the LG Twins at Jamjil from Tuesday to Thursday. And then from Friday to Sunday, they got three more games against the Samsung Lions in Daegu.
Go Twins. But we now go to the U.S. of A., where in Major League Baseball, outfielder Lee Jung-hoo of the San Francisco Giants is having his longest active hitting streak now. He has posted hits in 15 straight games, and he has shown no signs of slowing down. He seems to be playing very well, Jiho.
Yeah, so he's the hottest hitter in Major League Baseball right now. He's finally having the kind of season that many thought he was capable of having when he made the jump from the KBO to the majors. Now, season number three for him. He's among the major league leaders in batting average, hitting almost 500 during his 15-game hitting streak. And recently became the first Korean player to have five hits in an MLB game, hitting lots of line drives, spraying them all over the field. So he's not just getting chippies, rollers through the hole. He's hitting a lot of line drives all over the field and wasting no time keeping that streak alive today, delivered an RBI single against the Chicago Cubs in the first inning. For a while, the game was 1-1. The Giants ended up winning in 10 innings by 2-1, and Lee Jung-hoo knocking in the game's first run for the Giants.
Good luck to him. But finally, we go to golf. In LPGA golf, two Korean players came up short at the oldest major championship on their tour. Gio, give us a recap of the U.S. Women's Open in California.
Yeah, it was a pretty dramatic finish, but Chun In-ji finishing in fourth place at 6 under par at the U.S. Women's Open. Kim Se-young ended in fifth place at 5 under par. The 81st edition of the tournament out at the Riviera Country Club in Pacific Palisades near Los Angeles. Chun shot 1 under 70, Kim went on 1 over 72 in the final round. And Nelly Korda, world number one from the U.S., won her second straight major, her fourth career major title at 8 under par. Two other players, Charlie Hull and Gabby Lopez, tied for second place at 7 under par. Again, it was a pretty tight final round. Kim and Korda were actually tied at the top at the start of the final round. They matched each other shot for shot in the early going. And Charlie Hull made an early run, actually began a final round with an eagle on the first hole, made a couple more birdies, and Lopez made some noise on the back nine. And Chun In-ji actually grabbed a two-stroke lead with a birdie at the 11th hole. And that was the first time that any player held a two-stroke advantage during the final round. But then she started having some issues with her shots, just sending, her shots left and right, made consecutive bogeys at the 12th and 13th, scrambled for pars over the next few holes before making the one final fatal bogey on the last hole. Kim Se-young, in the meantime, played her way out of contention with bogeys at 13th and 14th. And she really struggled on the greens, was a little inconsistent with the shots in the final round.
Sounds like the Korean woman had a rough day at the office, but that's all we have today for Sports Roundup. Gio, thank you.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And that's it for today's edition of Korea 24, but we'll be back tomorrow. It was a blast serving as your host today. Again, you can always listen to Korea 24 on various apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, and KBS World Radio On Air at 7:10 p.m. Korea Standard Time every weekday. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Even think about checking that message or texting back. Did you know it only takes 3 seconds after a driver's attention has been diverted from the road for a crash to occur? Texting while driving is 6 times more likely to cause an accident than driving under the influence of alcohol. Sending or reading a text message causes drivers, on average, to take their eyes off the road for 5 seconds. When driving at 80 kilometers per hour, that means that drivers travel approximately the length of a football field with their eyes closed. At KBS World Radio, we value our listeners' safety and well-being. If you're listening to our programs while driving via your mobile device, please hit play before you set off on your journey. If you receive a message or call while driving, either use a hands-free Bluetooth device to respond or wait until you've arrived at your destination. You're not just putting your life at risk. Distracted driving accounts for approximately 25% of all motor vehicle crash fatalities. Arrive alive.
KBS World Radio.